Ago, I was pastoring another vineyard church that we had planted. I invited someone that I knew to join me as a senior leader. I'll call him John. It's not his real name. John was quite intelligent and spiritually gifted. I had known him for several years, and he seemed like a good addition to the team. He moved from another part of the country to join me. Ministry started out well, but after a while, someone told me what John had said to him. And it sounded to me to be rather abusive. And I thought there was some mistake. But another person came to me with a similar complaint. And I knew I had to investigate. I found out that John really could be verbally abusive to people, although never in my presence. He and I had many discussions about it, and I tried to help him in a couple of ways, one of which was rather expensive. I finally had to tell him, John, you'll never be a senior leader here. As long as I'm here, you will not be a senior leader here. I grieved over the matter. It was very sad, because he was my friend. But I needed to protect the sheep from an abusive shepherd. John became quite angry with me. On two separate occasions, he was overheard repeatedly cursing me, just walking up and down, curse, curse, curse. And a VCR that I had lent him was returned to me all smashed and not working anymore. Because of a dream, I became concerned about a physical attack, that my life might be in danger. He was very angry with me. Obviously, that didn't happen, but I still grieved over the whole matter. Last Sunday's sermon, we covered an incident where King Saul had not fulfilled a command that God had given him. This resulted in the prophet Samuel saying this to him. Thank you. And Samuel said, "Has the Lord his great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to listen than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of divination, and presumption is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you've rejected the word of the Lord, he's also rejected you from being king." More words were said, and the chapter ends like this. Then Samuel went to Ramah, and Saul went up to his house in Gibeah of Saul. And Samuel did not see Saul again until the day of his death. But Samuel grieved over Saul, and the Lord regretted that he had made Saul king over Israel. And that brings us to the beginning of today's passage in 1 Samuel 16. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you grieve over Saul, since I have rejected him from being king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided for myself a king among his sons." And Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears it, he will kill me." And the Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, 'I have come to sacrifice to the Lord,' and invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do. And you shall anoint for me him whom I declare to you." There can be real grief from seeing someone waste their life like that. I know. I felt a bit of that in that story I told you. And I know a little of what Samuel felt when he said, "If Saul hears it, he'll kill me." Now, he was pretty certain, and he was a prophet. Or I was just mildly concerned, but I think I felt a little bit of what he was feeling. The Lord wanted Samuel to move on, and he gave him specific instructions I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided for myself a king among his sons. Take a heifer with you and say, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord, and invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I show you what you shall do. And you shall anoint for me him who I declare to you. So he gave him a command and he gave him a strategy. Samuel's concerned about his physical safety. He gave him a strategy. Samuel obeyed God, continuing on. Samuel did what the Lord commanded and came to Bethlehem. The elders of the city came to meet him, trembling, and said, "Do you come peaceably?" And he said, "Peaceably. I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." And he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. Why would the elders come out trembling? I used to wonder about that. What? They probably remembered this incident from earlier. And I'm going to read a little bit of a passage that you had heard before, but then I'm going to continue on because it'll answer my question. Why were they trembling? This is Samuel speaking to the nation of Israel. "And when you saw that Nahash, the king of the Ammonites, came against you, you said to me, 'No, but a king shall reign over us,' when the Lord your God was your king. And now behold, the king whom you have chosen, for whom you have asked, behold, the Lord has set a king over you. If you will fear the Lord and serve him and obey his voice and not rebel against the commandment of the Lord, and if both you and the king who reigns over you will follow the Lord your God, it will be well. But if you will not obey the voice of the Lord, but rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then the hand of the Lord will be against you and your king. Now, therefore, stand still and see this great thing that the Lord will do before your eyes. Is it not wheat harvest today? I will call upon the Lord that he may send thunder and rain, and you shall know and see that your wickedness is great, which you have done in the sight of the Lord in asking for yourselves a king." So Samuel called upon the Lord, and the Lord sent thunder and rain that day, and all the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. So when Samuel comes to your place, this is a guy who's in touch with God and can move in power. Because you just didn't call on, we don't call on thunder and rain's gonna, by my command. And this is real power. It's no wonder these elders were trembling. They feared the Lord and Samuel. At the sacrifice in Bethlehem, this is what happened. When they came, he, that is Samuel, looked on Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before him." Samuel was pretty sure that Jesse's oldest son was the right one. The sons appear. Eliab's the oldest one. He's thinking, surely this is the right one. Continuing on. "But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart.'" Now Saul, he was a tall, handsome man. I mean, he was taller than anybody else. And he was handsome. And he was made king. And God chose him. But here, the Lord is saying to Samuel, don't look at the outward appearance, because I'm looking at the heart. This is the key verse. This is the key verse today. The outward appearance versus the heart, the inner person. Your image, or even your resume, is not what God looks at. He looks where no one else can see. Now, you may be a bodybuilder and look great physically, and that's fine. Or you may have really nice clothes and look really sharp, and that's fine. But God looks past all that stuff to look at your heart, to look at my heart. That's what he's really interested in. He knows everything about what's going on inside of you. So, he rejected Eliab. And the process continued. Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. And he said, neither has the Lord chosen this one. Then Jesse made Shammah pass by. And he said, neither has the Lord chosen this one. And Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel. And Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen these. I wonder if Samuel had any thoughts like, did I hear from God right? One of these guys is supposed to be the next king. And yet I don't have any sense of leading towards any of them. Let me tell you, I'd be thinking that. I'm thinking, boy, I got this screwed up again. There's a somewhat parallel situation more than 2,000 years later in the 15th century in France that had to do with someone being made king. England was taking over France. France couldn't stop what the English were doing, taking over territory, terrorizing the citizens. Now, there was a nominal monarch called the Dauphin who could not become king unless he was installed in Reims, consecrated in Reims. His name at that time, he was called Charles the Dreary. I don't think it's the name he chose. But his own mother had caused a lot of trouble in France. His own mother said, you're not the king. And he was losing this war, and he just kind of went from place to place, and he was dreary enough that he acquired that nickname. However, he liked going to religious services, and there came about a prophecy that France was ruined by a woman, which he assumed to be his mother, and would be saved by a second woman. So he wondered, who could that be? Well, turns out, a young teenage girl. She got some direction from above and went to see Charles the Dreary. I'm going to read now from a history book. It's part of a series of 12 volumes on history called The Christians, the First 2,000 Years. It's from Volume 7. When informed of the peasant girl's arrival, Charles didn't know what to do. Could this improbable peasant girl be the second woman? He consulted his council. Half thought the young peasant girl worth considering. The other half thought she was crazy. Some of the latter camp had suppressed a letter of recommendation she had secured from a noble close to Domremy. When this was discovered, the letter was finally produced. The Dauphin ordered that Joan be brought into the palace. As a test, he disguised himself among his courtiers. She stood before them, dressed quite shockingly in men's clothes. A short gray robe with the hood pulled back revealed her pageboy haircut. Then she strode straight to Charles. "May God grant you a long life, gentle Dauphin," she said. He was sorry, he replied, but she had made a mistake. He was not the Dauphin. Undeterred, Joan ignored the lie. "In God's name, gentle prince," she said, "you are he and no one else." The courtiers and prince were speechless, so she continued and outlined her mission. "Most illustrious Lord Dauphin, I am called Joan the Maid. I have come, sent by God, to bring help to you and to the kingdom of France. The kingdom of heaven commands through me that you be consecrated and crowned at Reims, and that you may be the king of heaven's lieutenant, who is the king of France." Now she announced herself as Joan the Maid. We know her as Joan of Arc, who you probably heard of. Doubtless the prince's counselors, thoroughly astonished, muttered to each other in argument. Charles shooed them away. For the next 2 hours, he talked with Joan. She told him things only he and God would know. She knew of his private prayers and fears, and she knew of his doubts about his heredity raised by his mother. "I tell you on behalf of God," she declared, "that you are the true heir of France and the son of the king." The Dauphin must have stared at her in awe. Then, says the record of the strange encounter, he wept. The gloomy gray mists that had haunted his life somehow lifted, and the gloomy gray face was transformed by joy. He was the King of France after all. Later, she led some troops that saved Orleans, which was being besieged, and they were so thrilled that they had a celebration on her behalf where they sang the song, "Come, Holy Spirit." Okay, back to Samuel. Samuel stuck with what God told him, even when it didn't look promising. He's gone through the list here. Person isn't there. Now, even as Joan of Arc apparently worked with prophetic words and words of knowledge, knowing things that had to be supernaturally revealed, Samuel is continuing with the direction that he has. Continuing on. Then Samuel said to Jesse, "Are all your sons here?" And he said, "There remains yet the youngest, but behold, he is keeping the sheep." And Samuel said to Jesse, "Send and get him, for we will not sit down till he comes here." And he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. And the Lord said, "Arise, anoint him, for this is he." Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward. And Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. His job was done. David was the one. The son who his father, Jesse, didn't even bother inviting to this event. Because for the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. His father was just looking on the outward appearance. This is just the youngest guy. He's not worth bothering with. But the Lord looks upon the heart. Samuel, I'm going to quote Samuel from three chapters earlier. "The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be prince over his people." He sought out a man after his own heart, after God's own heart. So that brings the question to us, how's your heart? And I got to ask myself, how's my heart? What does the Lord see when he looks there? What he sees could impact many people, like David becoming king of a nation. Or it could impact just one person, as described here in Luke chapter 1. "And the angel said to her, 'Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God.'" The person impacted by that was the Son of God. And you know the rest of the story. Or the impact could be on the whole human race. Like Noah. Genesis chapter 6. "But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord." These are the generations of Noah. Noah is a righteous man, blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God. And so through Noah, the whole human race. That was the impact when God looked upon Noah's heart. Or the impact could be just on yourself. Genesis chapter 5. When Enoch, this is a long time ago, when Enoch had lived 65 years, he fathered Methuselah. Enoch walked with God after he fathered Methuselah 300 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Enoch were 365 years. Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. You read that, and it's not like what really happened there? The caption to this picture is given in the book of Hebrews, chapter 11. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God had taken him. Now, before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. So what God sees in your heart could impact a nation or impact a very important person or impact the world or impact just yourself, like Enoch. So, invest in your own heart. I said to myself also, I need to invest in my own heart. Invest in your own heart. You can read all kinds of newsletters, how to make smart investments. When you invest in your heart, you are making a very smart investment. If you invest where God looks, he's not so much interested in your bank account or what you have stored away for retirement or even what your earning capabilities are. Or how you look, right? He's interested in, he's looking upon your heart and my heart. I'm going to finish with this passage. Now in a great house, this is from 2 Timothy chapter 2. Now in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for honorable use, some for dishonorable. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from what is dishonorable, he'll be a vessel for honorable use, set apart as holy, useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work. So, flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Be a person after God's own heart so God can choose you for honorable use. For ministry time, I'm going to ask the worship team to come back. Do one last worship song. If you're serious about this, pray the song. It's an old vineyard song. When I joined the vineyard in 1984, this is one of the songs I heard.
My heart, oh God.